It's the Big 550 KTRS. I am Paul Harris. It has been over 15 years since a show called Survivor debuted on CBS and changed the landscape of primetime television. For a long time, there were more unscripted shows on TV than scripted shows, and the number has only grown in that decade and a half. My next guest has been chronicling that 15 years of reality TV on his website, realityblurred.com, and has been a frequent guest on my show through those years, and I'm happy to have him back now to look back on 2015 in reality TV. Andy Daynard, welcome back to the Big 550.
Good morning, Paul. How are you?
I'm doing well. I mentioned Survivor because I've been a longtime fan of the show. I saw the first episode, I saw the most recent episode, and I've seen everyone in between. And I got to tell you, and I know you're a fan of the show as well, this season that just ended a couple of weeks ago seemed like one of the best they've ever had.
Yeah, I agree completely. I think, you know, maybe number two behind the first season for me, which will always be, you know, magical just because of what it was. But yeah, every single thing that made the show survive for 15 years was demonstrated throughout the season this fall. Like, we had amazing characters, incredible gameplay, and then some real-life drama from someone leaving to take care of their sick kid to, you know, just other moments in the game of, like, someone passing out in the middle of a challenge. So never mind all the production values and the great challenges and the editing, it just really all came together. And which is, it's in part amazing. I think we talked a little bit last spring about how awful last spring was, at least in terms of the people and their behavior. And the show certainly rebounded this fall.
Yeah. Oh, the spring, I had forgotten about how bad the spring was. But yeah, it definitely rebounded this fall. The only downside to Survivor continuing on TV is that, to me, Jeff Probst just gets more annoying with each season.
Yeah, I'm really... That's, I think, one of my pet peeves, too. And I like Jeff a lot, and I think he's a really strong host. But ever since he became executive producer, I don't know if he has someone reining him in enough, or at least someone to, like, help him make the best creative choices. I don't think screaming at the contestants 99% of the time during a challenge is helpful. I don't think his, you know, sort of berating certain story points over and over again to make sure that we get it as audience members is helpful. I think if he would back off 50%, the show would improve, you know, even more than it already has.
All right, so we both agree that this is still one of the best reality shows. What else would get that title from you?
So, yeah, a bunch, I think, in 2015 that really drew my attention. One I just finished, which I'll rave about because I think it was the last great show of 2015, which is Netflix's Making a Murderer. Have you seen any of this?
No, my wife and I have it in our queue, but we haven't watched it yet.
Yeah, it's a tremendous documentary, 10 episodes, and just kind of presents all of the information about a case that's about 10 years old. And this series has taken about 10 years to put together. And I think it's, you know, it's not really like a whodunit in the way The Jinx was earlier this year, which that was another one of my favorite shows on HBO. It's more like this is our criminal justice system, and I think it will shock you and horrify you, but also enrapture you in ways that you can't even imagine going into it. It's just every episode, there's more and more head-shaking stuff, and by the end of it, it's just kind of, no spoilers, but it's not exactly like happy series at the end, but it's kind of a bleakness throughout.
And it's a real story told in documentary style, right?
Absolutely, yeah. So these are real people, some of whom sat down for interviews very recently, and a lot of it is archival footage, so we get a lot of news footage. You get to see a whole trial play out, although they make it, you know, at least keep the editing going and kind of, and I think this is where it becomes reality TV, is that they cut pieces of the trial with other stuff, so you kind of get a perspective that you wouldn't have had if you were just reading the straight transcript, for example.
Making a Murderer is on Netflix now. By the way, this is now part of what I think we can officially call a subgenre between The Jinx on HBO and this thing on Netflix and the podcast Serial. Digging up cold cases and making documentaries about them seems to be the new way to go.
It does, and there's a new one coming early in 2016 on Discovery called Killing Fields. So I think we're going to see more of it, and I think, you know, television producers and networks are realizing that true crime is something that we've always been interested in as a society, and now this format works particularly well for telling these stories.
Okay, what else is on your list?
I think the other real standout for me this year was the Great British Baking Show. A lot of people who maybe bootlegged it or watched it online knew about it before this past year, but this is when PBS aired two seasons of it. It's a show from the UK. It's basically British people baking in a tent, and it is absolutely delightful because it's everything that reality TV has sort of piled on, all that stuff that we were talking about with Jeff Probst. None of that is there. It's just charming. It's people, you know, competing and doing what they love. And I'm so surprised that I loved it as much as I did, but I couldn't get enough of it.
I've got to ask you about a couple of other shows, both business-related. Yes. You know, we talked about the Survivor show and its success, a lot of which we have to give credit to Mark Burnett for creating and continuing to executive produce. But he's also the EP, the showrunner behind Shark Tank and Beyond the Tank on ABC, both of which I think have gotten better through the years. And there's a similar show on CNBC with The Prophet, this guy Marcus Lemonis, who takes over small businesses and gets involved in family hassles and tries to fix things. Also, fascinating television.
Yeah, both of those shows are at the top of my list, too. And I think it's interesting mentioning those, too, because Shark Tank, we're seeing, you know, businesses that have an idea and are looking for investors. Some of them have had some success. Others are very, very early, but we get to see, you know, smart people ask them questions and then see if they want to invest their own money. On The Prophet, like you said, Marcus Lemonis goes into these small businesses, and so many of the makeover shows on TV, like, they go in, they trash the place, they scream and yell. Gordon Ramsay is really good at that. They put some new paint and furniture in as compensation for basically harassing these people to make good television, and then they leave. But Marcus is investing, you know, tens of thousands, if not millions of dollars of his own money in these businesses, and he's invested literally and physically, and he's there helping them make changes. And they are real, you know, family businesses, and I think that's what makes it so compelling. And he keeps going back to them, which I don't know if you like those episodes this year, but those were some of my favorites, where he went and returned to stories that we'd seen in earlier seasons.
I think next week they're actually doing the new season, kicking off with one of those, look back at what I've done, and here's where we stand with previous businesses. I'm looking forward to seeing that. And I always love in each episode where he has to take somebody aside and say, do you understand that you're the family member that's screwing this whole thing up? It's usually somebody's brother-in-law who got involved in something they should not have gotten involved in, right?
Exactly. It's like everyone knows it, but no one's willing to say it until he shows up. And, you know, I think maybe we could all use someone like that in our lives to talk to the people who might be screwing things up, even if it's us.
Yeah, that outside voice can definitely help. Okay, give me a couple of others that are at the top of your list.
Another great one was The Last Alaskans, and I know probably the last thing most people want to see is another reality show set in Alaska, and I am in that category too. But it was remarkable, and for some reason, kind of in the same way that the Great British Baking Show stood out, which was just, it's very quiet and deliberate and just beautiful cinematography. A lot of it shot with drones, so there was like kind of amazing footage of, you know, the camera moving through tall trees and then kind of getting close to the ground and then just going in through an open window in a cabin. And that's kind of stuff you don't see anywhere else, but it follows four families who are living in the middle of ANWR, the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, in these cabins. And after they their lease is up or they die, I can't remember exactly what the criteria is, but once they leave, there will basically be no people who aren't natives allowed to continue to live there. So just kind of chronicling their way of life, and again, quiet, beautiful, serene. If you're looking for a way just to unwind this weekend, look that up on demand, The Last Alaskans.
Okay, and I've only got a minute left here. Tell me something that was at the other end of the spectrum, reality TV that made you go, oh, kick that off.
The worst thing for me this year was The Briefcase on CBS, the one where they showed up to a family and said, here's $100,000. Because you're desperately in need of money, and then said, oh, never mind, you actually can maybe give away some of this money to a family that's even more needy than you. And just like, it was such emotional manipulation for such a little payoff, And I hate when reality TV does that. Like, the shows we just talked about can find really great moments in actual reality, and they don't need to manipulate their contestants to get that.
Yeah, as I remember, they gave both families a briefcase with $100,000 and told this weeping, sad sack story about the other family just to manipulate them into seeing how much money they would give each other, right?
Exactly. You're right.
Yeah, that was horrible.
Not good.
You know, I didn't even watch the show because I read what you wrote about it on your website, but then I had to watch the clip, and the clip made my stomach hurt. Oh.
Yes, it was that, even that alone, I think, was enough. But I watched the first two episodes just to make sure, and I'm glad to take that one for the team because no one really needed to see it.
Andy Daynard is the editor and publisher of RealityBlurred.com. 15 years and still going strong, writing about the highs and lows of reality TV. Have a happy new year, Andy.
Thanks so much, Paul. You too. Happy 2016.
Thanks for joining me again here on the Big 550 KTRS.